Another road closeout game opportunity for the Phoenix Suns on Thursday night in Dallas. Can they get the job done, and what has to happen for them to do it? Damon Allred is here. We'll break it all down on today's Locked On Suns.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past five seasons and a contributor at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day. Hit that subscribe button, hit that follow button wherever you're finding us. We're everywhere on podcast platforms, and we are on YouTube. So if you're finding us there, a big thank you. Again, hit that subscribe button. And if you want other people to find the show, if you want to have a lively debate, as all Suns and Mavs fans have come together and done purely nicely, I'm sure, leave a comment below. Tell me what you think the key is for Game 6. Throw a Go Suns in there. We're getting outnumbered by the Go Mavs people, guys. I don't know if it's just the entire population of Slovenia or what's up, but we need reinforcements. So drop a comment below on YouTube, and that will support the show as well. All right, we're going to get into everything you need to know ahead of Game 6. What matters, what doesn't matter, and what are sort of the big picture narrative stuff hanging over this series, because there's been a lot of it. And joining me to talk about all of that is Damon Allred. He's a writer at Bright Side of the Sun and Zona Hoops. It's been a long time, Damon, but I wanted to get your thoughts because I did not get a chance to really comment on the nonsense, the BS, the camaraderie, so to speak, between these two teams in Game 5. Marquese Chriss getting ejected, Bismack Biyombo getting ejected, Marquese Chriss charging Bismack Biyombo backstage, basically. All of it. What is going on here? Is this just normal, or do these teams hate each other more than they should?
I think that there's no aspect of more than they should, but there's certainly more than most second-round opponents hate each other. You can trace that back to the Steve Nash-Maverick connection. You can trace that back to the 2018 draft with the Luka-Ayton debate that, frankly, both sides have been right about so far. You can make the case. And, yeah, the Booker-Doncic aspect is big now too, with the trash talk between them and the Luka special and all that, and then to add insult to injury, the dunk with 30 seconds left, and the Suns are talking trash because they're up 3-2, and that's just the state of things.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Marquese Chriss Bismack Biyombo play just a bit, because again, I didn't get the chance to yesterday. First of all, leaving any baggage that Marquese Chriss has among Phoenix residents aside as much as I possibly can, although I'm sure that's clouding how I'm thinking about this. The idea that Bismack Biyombo was supposed to have the ball swing to him and then just completely ignore the opportunity to dunk the ball. He caught the ball under the basket, okay? If he doesn't score there, what happens, or what is bound to happen, is that the Mavs then try to steal the ball from him. They try to foul him. They do whatever to stop the clock. He got the ball in a position to score. And the idea that Marquese Chriss, like, he can't even get on the floor in this series and he finally gets the opportunity to, and what he takes that opportunity, what he does with that opportunity is gets in a fight with somebody is, I mean, it's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing. It's pretty, it's bad. It's not ideal. It's not what you want. So I don't know if you have comments on that, but there's also the Booker selling the flagrant foul on Dorian Finney-Smith in the third quarter as the Suns were basically carving out a lead that they would not relinquish. And then footage comes out afterward, and you can honestly even see it on the broadcast quite a bit. You can read his mouth saying the Luka special, basically saying Luka flailing around on the floor is a trademark that Booker is stealing in that situation. Just hilarious. I mean, and to me, it's like, part of what's been fun about this series is that Luka actually matches it. Like, not to say in round one that guys like Alvarado or, I guess, Jackson Hayes, whatever, Herb Jones, weren't matching it also, but they're bringing out the best in each other. I genuinely think that. And that's pretty cool. Like, I think it could be the beginning of some type of rivalry. I think this is the type of playoff battles that fans remember. This is what we watch this stuff for. Like, does it piss the other side off when one star does something obnoxious? Of course, but great. So what? That's kind of the point of all this stuff. What do you make of all of it? Is this going to be a rivalry?
Yeah, I think as long as Luka's there and as long as Dallas is putting themselves in a position to make the playoffs and advance in the playoffs and the Suns are doing the same, I think that it's going to be a matchup we see almost every year. And as for the Bismack-Chris incident, you know, like, brings you back to baseball things with unwritten rules. And frankly, yeah. I have not seen an unwritten rule in baseball that I like. They're all stupid. And truly, if you're there with a chance to dunk, I'm going to dunk it, you know, like everyone should be dunking it if they have a chance to dunk it.
Yeah. I mean, if your argument for swinging at somebody is that they dunked instead of laying it up, if that's the problem, that's also ridiculous. I just, it's silly. And I would honestly take it a little bit better. This is going to sound a little bit rude, but like, whatever, I'm already here. It would be one thing if the guy that Biombo, you know, quote unquote, disrespected in that moment mattered in the series, had earned the respect of the Suns. This is a bench player who's done nothing, who there's nothing owed to Marquese Chris in that moment. He has not done anything to win the games that the Mavs have won. He has not fought to try to keep them from losing. He's out there as a white flag. It's just embarrassing to go out there and fight somebody. But all that aside, what I wanted to talk about here too is what we've learned about the Suns in the series. Like, not to look too far ahead, I'm definitely not saying this thing is over, but we know the stats. 82% of teams that win game fives have gone on to win the series. If the Suns were to fall apart here, it would be pretty egregious. So I'm not trying to look too far forward, but I think even going into game six, some of this stuff will be relevant. So the few things that I had, and they're along these lines. So I think that you kind of, what we've learned through really two series, but this one too, it's with the better opponent, is you take the good and the bad, I think, with the Suns kind of nonsense. Like, I think that you could make a pretty reasonable case that they've beaten themselves at times because of it. Chris Paul fouling out, the Suns dropping a couple games because of frustration in New Orleans, things like that. But I also think you have to just admit that it galvanizes these guys. Like, they are given life by being sicko, obnoxious, a-hole competitors out there. Like, that's undeniable. And they bring it out of their opponent. Like, I think after last year's playoffs, I was kind of like, okay, they played the Lakers. That was obviously going to be a whole thing because that's just an incredible opponent. You have to rise to that occasion, and you have to come in with confidence if you're going to have any chance of beating the defending champions. Then it was the Nuggets, and it was like, okay, that was kind of crazy. You know, Jokic fouls out at one point. There's the Suns and four guy in the crowd and whatever, but it wasn't that competitive of a series. And then conference finals, it's like, all right, well, Patrick Beverley's an insane person who tries to hurt people on a basketball court. You can explain it away. And then it didn't really come to be a problem in the Bucks series. I think the Bucks are all just like nice dudes. So I guess Bobby Portis a little bit. But this year, it's like, okay, no, it's definitely coming from the Sun side a lot. What do you think? Is this, do you feel like they strike that balance enough between good and bad? How do you feel about the kind of the antics, so to speak?
Well, I think it's really magnified by the fact that, and you know, MVP votes just came out and we see Booker fourth, Luka fifth, and it's not like exactly neck and neck, but it's close. And So just the fact that the two most vocal pieces to the animosity in this series so far are both to that caliber, where they're both finishing top five in MVP voting, I think that that's so much different, especially as opposed to the first round series, when like you get a Jose Alvarado talking a lot of smack, and you get a lot of Herb Jones talking a lot of smack, but those guys are not finishing top five in MVP voting. And so that really does a lot to magnify it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's had an impact on the games? Do you think that the mistakes that we've seen from the Suns are related to that? Or do you think it's just you know, basketball is one thing. That stuff is extra, and it probably doesn't impact the result.
Probably a little more than more on the latter, but at the same time, you know, in games 3 and 4, it really felt like there were momentum swings or shifts mm-hmm. that really pushed those games out of hand for the Suns. So I feel like they could do a better job of staying level-headed when they need to be, and then being able to be that petty team that crushes your throat when they're doing so on the court as well.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. I think it definitely has impacted Chris Paul in this series and in the last series. I think he's the probably singular guy you point to and say, when he's distracted or focused on the wrong things or just messing around too much, it really ripples through in a lot of different areas, because so many guys on this team count on Chris to make them better versions of themselves. And then when that doesn't happen, when he's not at his best, then they're not at their best. And we obviously see the impact that can have. Most of every single loss the Suns have suffered in this playoffs has been because Chris Paul didn't play well or didn't play good enough. So with that in mind, I do have one more observation, lessons from this series, but I want to kind of actually swing it into what we saw in Game 5 and what we can expect in Game 6. So that's what we'll hit next. First, though, guys, today's show brought to you by BetOnline. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for sports betting needs and all of your sports betting info throughout the year, throughout the entire sports calendar. We just had an insane Kentucky Derby where a horse, I mean, I don't know the names of any of these horses, but 80-1 is obviously going to get your attention no matter what. You also have the basketball playoffs. You have the MLB regular season, and BetOnline is the number one place to go throughout all of it. Analysis, news, podcasts, up-to-date info in terms of odds. You have live betting. You have lines like this series that are getting updated every single day. Let's see. Suns minus 750, which totally makes sense after a Game 5 win, but what's interesting, 76ers Heat are only minus 400 despite winning their Game 5. So, and they have home court just like the Suns do. So just keep an eye on these things. The Warriors are minus 7,000, which is a little depressing. Obviously, don't like to see John Morant go down. But whether it's the NBA or any other sport throughout the year, BetOnline is the place to go. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Damon, so DeAndre Ayton was the guy that I was going to highlight here. I think if I'm coming away from, you know, 11 Suns playoff games now, I think he's unquestionably raised his game another level this year. I think that comes with a caveat, though, and it's almost like in parentheses when he's engaged. And that has continued to be a little bit of a problem. I think you could obviously see the difference between games two from 1 to 2 through 4, and then from 2 through 4 to 5, it's very difficult to know what version of DeAndre you're going to get. He gets up for these big ones, but he doesn't always get up for every moment of every game, and that matters when you get deeper into the playoffs. So what have you thought of Ayton versus what we saw from him last year? How have you seen him improve or add to his game, change his game, as we've kind of made our way through two rounds now?
Yeah, he's been a lot more inconsistent, I guess is the best word for it, in this playoffs than last playoffs. And I think part of that is just due to he's able to handle a lot more of the offensive load than he was asked to do in the last playoffs. Like, there was a certain play in Game 5 when, and this is probably the only bad play of his during that game, is when he catches the ball just inside the mid-post area and he's got a wide-open lane, but instead he just turns the wrong way and dribbles into traffic and has to pass out. But I think overall he's shown up in the home games, at least. It seems like he's a lot more, I guess, swayed by his own fans and isn't like Booker, in where we see Booker a lot, you know, relish in the boos of a road game. And I don't think Ayton's really built that way. But, you know, in Game 5, he gets back to it. He says that in almost those exact words after the game, too, is he feels like he got back to that Game 1, which was a goal of his going into that game. So I think that's promising.
Yeah, Ayton's averaging more points, more a higher field goal percentage in the playoffs than he did this regular season. He, which already from last regular season to this regular season, he made strides. And now from this regular season to the postseason, yet another step forward, which is obviously good to see and has helped the Suns a great deal. I mean, he was in game three of that New Orleans series. I've said it multiple times already. That was one of the better games that I think I've ever seen him play. He's been important in two big Suns wins in this series. But let's fast forward to this game six. So flipping things over to the Mavs just a little bit, the biggest question I think I have, at least, coming out of game five, heading into game six, is can Luka rediscover, really, the best version of himself? The guy that we saw, I think game three was the best game that Luka's had in this series, even though it wasn't his highest point total. Obviously, game one was. But what did you see from how the Suns handled Luka, how Luka played in game five? Do you think he's capable of more in game six, and how do you see him getting there, if so?
You know, I wonder if there's a little bit of fatigue starting to set in with Luka. He's been better at the start of games recently, and I don't think the Suns were doing anything all that different from what they've been doing in their approach with Luka. You know, a lot of it is playing straight up and then helping where available, zoning up where available. But for the most part, they've just been playing him straight up, even if that's Biombo out on the perimeter against him. And I think just the physical toll of having to carry such a load for this team and the mental and emotional toll of, you know, all those capital N narrative things that you were talking about. I wonder if it's just starting to wear on him a little bit as we get later on in this series.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That third quarter when the Suns were making their run, the weird thing about that run is we've seen Suns runs throughout the past 2 years where they turn it on in an instant. And it's a 10-0, it's a 12-0, it's a 15-2, it's a 20-4, you know, in a few minutes. That run was long. It was mostly because the Mavs could not score. The Suns' offensive execution in that stretch in the third quarter was good, but not elite. I mean, they only came away with 110. I know they scored 61 in the second half and 33 in that third quarter, but you know, it felt like they had like 40 points on the table for, you know, maybe more. And just based on the looks they were getting and everything else, that was a lot to me about the Mavs not being able to put the ball into the basket. And Luka looked gassed, I think, for sure. You know, bigger conversation to be had about this play style and how much is put on Luka, et cetera, et cetera. Not for a Suns show to necessarily focus on, but I do have some data on Matt, the Luka drives in this series. So he's averaged 2.6 turnovers per game on drives in this series. That number was 1.1 in the regular season. So the turnover rate was only 4.4% in the regular season. Now it's 11. He's passing out of drives on 43% of them. It was only 39% in the regular season. You'd think that should be the flip, where he's getting to the basket as a scorer more when he needs to. He's shooting field goal attempts, free throw attempts down. He's just not in position as a scorer. I think the biggest thing, it was in that third quarter, but it was throughout the whole game. Big credit to Cam Johnson for holding up better. I think you have to say that he did that. But Luka had been looking at Cameron Johnson as a feast in games one through four. That just didn't happen in game five. He was taking pull-up threes over and over when Cam Johnson was isolated on him and not even testing the matchup. So that to me was a perfect example of like Luka is just not in attack mode. I don't know if he really can be. The Mavs shooters is the other thing I want to ask you about. So one of the things that I think is just so tough in these games when you're looking at a one game sample or even a five game sample is, did the Mavs shooters really get that many more difficult looks, or did they just miss? And I feel like in my recap show yesterday, I was like arguing with myself, delirious at 11:30 at night, just trying to like come down on one side of this or the other. What do you think? Because I agree with you that they didn't really seem to do anything terribly different against Luka. Do you feel like they did anything different to contest back on those shooters? Do you feel like the looks were actually more difficult, or did we just get a cold night from Dallas?
Yeah, so I was looking at a lot of the defensive tracking numbers up on NBA.com, and the Cam Johnson stuff that you were mentioning too stood out to me a lot. No other Suns player defended on more shots than Cam. Cam was at 18 field goals defensed, and the next closest was 12, and that was Chris Paul. And obviously, Cam isn't even playing close to the minutes that Chris Paul is. So, yeah, they're really targeting him. And to Cam's credit, he only allowed 5 makes on those 18 attempts. So that's a plus. As far as the kind of shots that the Mavericks were getting, I went and looked at the shot quality scores for the Suns and Mavericks before hopping on to record. And I think the total was the Suns were projected to score 108 and the Mavericks were projected to score 102. So that, as far as shot looks that they're getting, it's not that far apart. And obviously, most of the time, the Mavericks are shooting a lot more threes. That wasn't the case in Game 5. They both shot 32. But, yeah, when...
Yeah,
when,
I think I saw on the shot quality, that Twitter account that's just, like, at shot quality, that it, they said that the Mavs left 14, and that's just an average. I know 3 doesn't go into 14. They left 14 points on the table from threes alone. So they should have had 14 more points if they just shot better on threes. I don't exactly know how they get to 14. I know that that sounds weird. I'm not smart enough to get that, but you're totally right. I think that indicates, and that was kind of what was happening in games 1 and 2 also, where it was telling us, hey, this game should have been closer. The Mavs should have, I think that the data said the Mavs should have won game 1, and then in game 2, it should have been much closer, even though it ended up being a 20-point win because Chris Paul went crazy. A couple things, though, that I do think are a little bit sustainable from what we saw. I think they contained Kleba a lot better. I feel like he only got, basically, from what I could remember, and I watched some of this game back today, especially the third quarter, he really only got one open in-rhythm three. He had one that was really deep that was somewhat open, but it didn't really have a chance. It was during that third quarter stretch. I think that they had a little bit of a better balance in terms of the timing on switching that if they were going to, rather than getting lost in no man's land where Ayton is now kind of halfway containing Luka, but not really, but he's too far to get back out to Kleba. It feels like they had more of that timing and communication down. Okay, now switch. And then, you know, there's no opening for Kleba to get an open three just a few feet away from where Luka is. I also think Bullock, like, he wasn't, he was 0 of 5, 0 of 3 from 3. He missed portion of this game on hurt on the sideline. I think if he's affected by his injury, that's going to matter. And then I also think, like, Bertans, he's a good shooter. If they're able to get him good looks and the Suns aren't going to punish him when he's on the floor defensively, whatever, he might be able to continue to make some shots. I think Luka, you just wait and see if he's in rhythm that night. Kleba, I mentioned. Bullock, I mentioned. Finney Smith, I think he's going to get his because he's just going to be in the corner and they can generate those really well. Dinwiddie's the guy that I think is going under the radar because you look at the box score every night in these games and he's rarely efficient or anywhere near it, but he's making timely threes in most of the Mavs wins or in both of the Mavs wins. And if he's not on, like, those little, you know, 3, 6, 9 points here and there do make a difference for a team that's so reliant on threes, and Dinwiddie was just bad in game 5. So I think those are a few things I could see continuing, but I agree with you. I mean, the data doesn't really lie in terms of that stuff, and I think the Mavs have been pretty solid generating good looks all series long. I want to let you respond on some of that and talk about the rotation a little bit, because we talked about Cam Johnson, we kind of talked around some of the other stuff, but can Chris Paul put the kill shot down and get the job done in game 6, and what are some of the other keys for the Suns to close this out, get a win, do it again on the road as they did time and again last year? First, though, guys, today's show is brought to you by Rock Auto. Oh, my God. They are preaching to the choir right now. I have been dealing with car stuff for far longer than I want because of an accident, and I'm getting a new car, but I'm also trying to get a new car that I don't have to worry about repairs, because there is nothing worse than constant repairs, mostly because of the place that you go and the way that they try to take advantage of you, whether it's a dealership or even a chain parts store. You're just subject to whatever the heck they want to charge you, because they have the part, they know you need it, and that's about all that matters. So save time and money by switching to Rock Auto. They're a family business. They've been serving do-it-yourselfers online for over 20 years. Pretty crazy to think. There's not a lot of companies that have been doing anything online for 20 years, but these guys have been doing this exact thing fast, cheap, and easy for their customers for 20 plus years. So go explore their easy to use website today and find the solution to your auto part needs. Again, that's rockauto.com. See all the parts available for your car or truck and write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, Damon, so I don't know if you had any additional thoughts on the Mavs' three-point shooting, but the other thing I wanted to quickly hit on in terms of another key is the rotation, and it goes right in line with Chris Paul because Cam Payne finally, mercifully finally hit the bench, and Landry Shamet stepped up big time in his place, and I think that was a lot of why Booker and Paul looked better, felt more comfortable. The offense just churned for all 48 minutes rather than having these little black holes of campaign playing where it kind of degrades into, you know, bad shots from time to time. So do you think Shamet can keep it up? And again, if you have any more thoughts on the Mavs shooting, because I do think that's just... you have to pay attention to it. It's been swinging these games.
Yeah, so with the Mavs shooting, one of the most important things for Game 6 to me is sort of this element of if Dantons is going to continue to be this sniper from outside. Like, he was advertised before he signed a big contract in Washington, and, like, he has been at points for the Mavericks since that trade. The Suns have to make the Mavericks pay for playing him on the other end, which kind of goes hand in hand with something that I feel deeply about with Game 6, is that if the Suns are going to be able to sit out and get the win, punch the ticket to the conference, it's going to have to be by finding and exploiting a pigeon on the Dallas defense. And whether that's Luka or Bertans or anyone we find and exploit in that way, it's got to happen in Game 6 if they want to come out with a win.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I tend to feel like, well, so there were, you know, there was some of Booker doing that, I think, in Game 5. Not so much in the isolation way that we see some teams do it, that, you know, LeBron or James Harden made us kind of recognize better. But Booker was, the Suns were running like, they almost, you know, dumbed down their offense at times in Game 5, and they were just running like little dribble handoff, almost, you know, Kansas-style weave offense at the top of the key, and then just Dallas was getting pulled in too many directions, it felt like, and the Suns shooters were obviously making shots, and Booker was just relentless getting to his spots in the mid-range and making them. I think, though, if you are sort of being more purposeful about who is going to be the one to, you know, run a screen and roll or initiate a set that kind of pings the wrong guy and makes that person guard, it's always Chris Paul for this team. And I agree with you that they have not done the best job exploiting stuff like that in this series. I think Game 5 shows us an example of they didn't really have to or didn't do it as overtly, and they still won, but again, I don't think you can count on the Mavs to be so cold. So this was one of the things I wrote down. I just don't think that any of the Mavs bigs have been able to stay with Chris on a switch. Like, I thought going into the series, we could see Kleba be able to do that, similar to what, you know, Draymond Green has done. Not to say that they're the same type of player, but that sort of, you know, put your big man on Ayton or even put him on Chris and you just are comfortable giving up that switch. I don't think the Mavs should want to live with that. I think that Chris has gotten to his mid-range stuff over the top of Kleba, as well as Powell and obviously Bertans. I don't necessarily know how it's going to happen, but Sam Cooper had this on Twitter, and, you know, the last three games of closeout Chris Paul, 37-3-7 against Denver, 41-4-8 against the Clippers, and then 33-5-8 against the Pelicans last series. I would even throw in there, though, Game 6 against the Lakers prior to that, he only has, you know, barely starting to get feeling back in his arm, and he had 12 assists and just one turnover. He was a +3 in 29 minutes and was a genuine positive getting Booker some of the open shots that he did in that game. So I just think you're going to have to get Chris Paul. He's only averaging 35 minutes per game in these playoffs. So is that, like... I don't know. Sometimes it's so hard to analyze this stuff because it's like, does Chris Paul just go supernova? That's an impossible question to necessarily answer, but I definitely feel like he can.
Yeah. And part of that is due to Shamet and how effective he was able to be in game five and how the Suns completed that perfect, nice and clean stagger between Paul and Booker. And Shamet was really showing all the things that you always wanted out of Payne, just this decisive confidence in running the offense and being smart about it, not being decisive in the wrong ways. And I just think that if he's able to do that at all and Paul is able to get any sort of meaningful rest in the first half while the game is still competitive, then I think in the second half, he's absolutely primed to go supernova.
What else do you think will matter in game six that we haven't hit on, or something that maybe going under the radar, or just something to emphasize as people get ready for the game here on Thursday night?
I think it's really important for the three main wings, Bridges, Johnson, and Crowder, to all have really strong games. And that's assuming Crowder is able to come back from the shoulder thing. I think Monty said that he should be fine. Is that right?
Yeah, he's not on the injury report. They just released it while we were recording. He's not on there. So maybe he'll be hampered, but he's not going to miss the game, it doesn't look like.
Yeah, I think all three of those guys have to be really solid, especially on defense, and they can't be turning over the ball a ton. And as long as they're able to be solid, then I think it'll give the Suns a chance. And when I mean solid defensively, I mean especially on like the ancillary pieces for Dallas, the Dorian Finney-Smiths and Reggie Bullocks and all that. I think that's going to be the most key to being able to set up a win in game six.
Yeah, it's overly simple, but I just think like this series was always going to come down to me to, you know, who defended the opposing team's pick and rolls the best. And I think the Suns have won that battle more times than the Mavs, and that's a good portion of why they've won. And I've talked about pace a lot too, because, you know, if you're, especially against a team that takes so many threes, if they're missing shots, if you're forcing them into misses more often than they usually miss shots, then you're going to get long rebounds, you're going to get turnovers, you're going to get those errant passes that Luka's throwing, and you're going to be able to run. Like, these teams don't run, they run cool, pretty sophisticated pick and roll offense a lot of the time, but they're not, you know, trying to do Warriors type stuff on offense. They're not throwing the ball into Joel Embiid and whatever. They run pick and roll. That's what they do. And I think you're right. Like, if the Mavs shooters feel the Suns' defense as much as they did at the Suns' best in this series, and if Luka continues to play less than his most 100% aggressive version of himself, and it's not to discount what the Suns need to do on offense, but I don't think the Suns' offense has been a problem much of this series. I just think the Suns win. I think that's been the case all along. You know, you could say, okay, the Mavs shooters probably shoot better, the role players probably pay better at home, but I don't know. I don't buy into that so much to the point where I think the Suns like need to worry about it. So yeah, I don't know. I feel pretty good that the Suns, if they just can replicate, you know, most of what they were able to do in game five, I think they come away with the win.
Yeah, I'm pretty with you. And I think it's going to be pretty clear from the start of the game whether they're bringing that intensity and whether they are the aggressors, then I think it'll work out well.
Yeah, for sure. All right, guys, enjoy game six. I'm going to keep saying that every day. It's supposed to be fun. And it's a lot easier to enjoy game six when the team you like is up 3-2, obviously. So have fun watching. I'll be with you right after the buzzer in this case, because you don't have to worry about me driving home. So be on the lookout in your feed for the show. And a big thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on game day. Now go make Locked On NBA your second listen to catch up on all the other series across the NBA.